Welcome, and thank you for standing by. I would like to remind all participants that all lines will be on listen-only for the duration of today's conference call. The call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to our first speaker, Ms. Wanguie McKelvey. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Tanya. Good morning, everyone. My name is Wanguie McKelvey, and I'm the X-Force Marketing Manager. And today we're going to talk to you about some of the key highlights from our recently released X-Force Mid-Year Trend and Risk Report that launched last week. And then we're also going to provide you some insight and details on how you can leverage this data information in some of your sales deals. So if you move on to slide two, this chart really depicts the four primary pieces that make up X-Force. And so I wanted to take a minute to just go through this with you so that you can understand the depth and breadth that we have within X-Force. We have research, engines, content delivery, and industry and customer deliverables as the four key pillars of X-Force. Our research group has to understand what the security issues are and how they work. That information then feeds into the engines that actually protect our customers from threats. And then the engines and research together are delivered through content delivery updates to our customers on a regular basis. We have a team that's dedicated to this and to ensure its quality when it goes out to our customers. And then we have industry and customer deliverables, which include the blogs that we have, the speaking engagements, and then ultimately the threat reports that we're here to talk to you about today. So I just wanted to make sure you guys were aware of all the different pieces that come together to form this X-Force team that we have to help us provide the best security brand to our customers and our business partners. So moving on to slide three, we take a lot of different data from a lot of different sources to build the data that comes into the report. We have a web filtering database that's second only to Google that can provide analysis for more than 10 billion websites and images. We work with our managed security services team where they look at different types of intrusion attempts that occur. Right now, we're right about 150 million intrusion attempts daily that they monitor and see across our customer base. We see over 40 million spam and phishing attacks with this group. And then also, we have one of the most largest vulnerability databases in the world with over 51,000 documented vulnerabilities in the X-Force database. So lots of information that we have at our disposal that we use to actually put the churn and risk report together. And then on the left side is just a mission statement of X-Force. You can see here, educating the media and user communities is a big focus for us as well. So that's really sort of the point of why we do these reports twice a year. Moving on to slide four, this slide is talks about all of the marketing launch activities around the report. So I wanted to put this in here so you could really see sort of this rolling cadence that we have going on with this report. As you're aware, we launched it last week on August 25th with a worldwide press release. If you haven't seen it, it's on the ibm.com/press website, and you can go there and view it, and there's a link in here actually that will take you right to that press release. And so make sure you have look at it. There's also a video clip of Tom Cross going through some of the highlights, so be sure you check that out if you haven't seen it yet. We also have the report itself as well as a separate graphics package available on IBM.com as well as all of our security pages. So it's right front and center for all those who want to point your customers to our pages to view that. Also, some of the other customer deliverables that we're working on, we're going to do a customer-facing webinar. I just want to go through the highlights. Also, a CIO top sheet that's going to be sort of like an executive overview of the report. It'll be maybe a four-page overview so that for those that want to just have highlights that they can hand out to an executive audience. We're going to do a podcast with the IBM Institute for Advanced Security as well as working with our new Big Six team to participate in their podcast series as well. And then later on in the month of September, we're going to be doing a SANS Institute webcast. This is with the SANS group. They are a major security training and certification organization, and we have been doing a webcast series with them over the course of this year. So we'll have one dedicated to the trend report that will be at the end, around September 22nd, I believe. So we'll have more information about that. And then, as you can see here, just tons of activity. We're going to partner with the managing risk team to do a virtual security event. And then also this year, we're going to be working with the IBM Government Affairs Office to see how we can leverage this information and take it to some of the policymakers on Capitol Hill. So lots of information and lots of activity around the launch of the report. And on the left side, you'll see at the top, these are some web banners that we had created around the launch of the report. So we have some web banners as well that can be used by our business partner community, as well as any other seller that want to have these if needed. So please contact me if you have any questions about any of the marketing activities around the launch of the report. Moving on to slide 5. This is a summary of all of the key highlights from the report. So I would say if you are looking for one slide that just talks about some of the key findings from the report, this is it. And it's mapped back to the IBM security framework. So you can just use this as an eye chart if you need to just have one slide about the report. So I'm not going to go through each one of these because we have slides behind this slide that will talk about each of these, but I just wanted you guys to have this one overview chart so that you can see some of the key points that we make here. So going down to slide 6, so one of the key things we saw in the first half of 2010 was that the number of vulnerability disclosures was up at an all-time high for the first half of this year, up 36%. This is actually significant because over the past several years, we were sort of seeing this leveling out at a high plateau. We thought we were kind of turning the corner on the vulnerability disclosures. But this first half of this year, we saw this big jump. And some reasons for this jump is that we have seen some significant increases in public exploits that have been released, as well as we see some major vendors doing a very good job at trying to identify and mitigate security vulnerabilities. So those two things hand in hand we see could be some key drivers in this increase in vulnerability disclosures. So right now the number is right around 4,300 that we saw for the first half of the year, and if that trend continues, by the end of the year we think we're going to see a significant number of vulnerability disclosures for the year. So very interesting statistic here and one that we were a little bit surprised about. So if you go down to slide 7, here are some questions and answers for your customers. So because of this record number of vulnerabilities, the question you have to ask your customers are, how are you compensating for this record number of vulnerabilities? Do you have an assessment process in place? Are you confident that you can be protected even before a vendor patch is available? And what about the vulnerabilities you don't know about? So IBM has several different offerings that can speak to answer some of these types of questions. With our Managed Security Services group, we recently launched a cloud-based vulnerability management and PCI scan service. So this is something that will take care of the vulnerability assessment needs if a customer has one or doesn't have a process in place. We also have IBM Rational App Scan that actually scans web applications for vulnerabilities and reports on that information back to the customer. With our professional security group, services group, we have an application security assessment service as well. And then with our network IPS product within the IBM security solutions group, we have our network IPS product as well that can help actually protect networks and infrastructure from vulnerabilities. So questions to ask on the left, answers that we have on the right. So we just want to make sure that you guys know these are some of the key offerings that can help answer some of these questions. So if you go to slide 8, so because of all the vulnerabilities that we see, we had to take a step back a couple years ago to really try to figure out a better way to categorize them so that we can explain which type of vulnerabilities are most dangerous or easily picked that the attackers would actually use to actually exploit. So traditionally, the way vulnerabilities are categorized, some may be categorized as critical or high. It may not necessarily be a target for attackers, and that wouldn't give them a high payout. So a couple years ago, we put together this. This year we're calling it the exploit effort versus potential reward chart. And essentially what it is it plots the opportunity size on the y-axis and the cost to exploit on the x-axis. So ideally, the criminal community will look for an exploit that falls in the upper right-hand quadrant of this chart. So it's a vulnerability that's cheap to exploit but has lots of targets and a high potential payout for them. So you can see here in this chart the Adobe Flash and PDF vulnerabilities that we saw, some of the browser vulnerabilities that we saw. So this goes right to what we have been seeing in the first half of the year. So just wanted to show you what this chart was and to really kind of look at some of the vulnerabilities that attackers we think attackers will target because of its ease to exploit and its potential reward capabilities. Moving on to slide 9. This chart talks to the top vendors that account for over 20% of all the disclosed vulnerabilities that we saw in the first half of the year. This number was slightly down from 2009, which was at 23%. Some significant changes to the top 10 list. Apple still is at the top position for the second year in a row, and then Sun dropped down to the bottom of the list. So just want to make sure, just because we see vendors on this list doesn't necessarily, it's not a bad thing. These vendors are doing a very good job of practicing a good vulnerability disclosure process. So we always like to tell people, you know, really we should be concerned about the vendors that are not on this list, because those that aren't on this list, you know, what are they doing? Are they taking security seriously? So just keep in mind when you're talking to customers, and they may say, you know, if they have comments about this, that these are the guys that are doing a good job with their vulnerability disclosure process. So moving on to slide 10. So of all the vulnerabilities that were disclosed in the first half of the year, over half of them, 55%, had no vendor-supplied patch to remedy the vulnerability by the first half of the year. This is very significant. And of that, 71% of the critical and high vulnerabilities had no patch. But before I move on the right side chart that shows the percentage of 2010 disclosures with no patch, we've recently just updated this chart. So some of you who may have downloaded the report, this presentation, may have an old chart. So that's getting updated, and you should be able to get that here momentarily. But so just make sure you go look for that. But anyway, the point here is that half of the vulnerabilities that were disclosed had no patch. So even if your customer has a 100% patch rate, they could still be vulnerable to these type of vulnerabilities that have no patch. And so this is really critical because we want to make sure that you're talking to your customers about the fact that patching alone is not enough, and that here's an opportunity to talk about our assessment capabilities to uncover vulnerabilities. And then you can talk about our protection capabilities, like with our network IPS and the virtual patch technology that can provide protection capabilities before a vendor-supplied patch is available. The chart on the bottom left shows the operating systems with the most critical and high vulnerabilities during the first half of the year. So Microsoft, Apple, and Linux actually tops this list. So before I move on, I want to ask Jamie LaFeature, who is our Exports Product Manager, to see if he has any other comments on this slide. Jamie, you have anything else to add here?
Thanks, Wingo. I think you really hit the key points here, and that's that because there are 55% or over half of the vulnerabilities in our Xforce database that are unpatched, that really mitigating threats in your network cannot begin and end with patch management. And that's really a key point, as you said, to discuss with customers, because you know if you want to have a security in depth posture, you need to do a little bit of everything from IPS to virus scanning, and a big part there is also user education. So the main point here with this slide is that yes, you can't just patch your systems and assume that you're safe, because statistically, probably half the software that you have on your network is still holding vulnerabilities.
Right. Thanks, Jamie. Okay, so moving on to slide 11. This slide shows the most vulnerable operating systems for the first half of the year. So here we see Linux had the greatest percentage of operating system vulnerabilities, with Apple following in second place here. And then you can see the top five here listed. going on to slide 12. So this slide breaks down the motivation of an attacker. So here we see gain access and data manipulation still rank high as motivation for criminal organizations, up 52% in the first half for gain access, and then data manipulation is up 21%. So questions to ask your customers. Are you confident that an attacker cannot gain access to your system? Is your data secure? And on the right side, here's some offerings within IBM Security that can help address some of these issues. So, again, you know, here's some real hard, fast, factual data that you can take to a customer to tell them that, you know, you have to be concerned about the motivation of attackers. They want to get access to your stuff. So how are you going to protect yourself? And so we have some key offerings here that can help with that. Moving on to slide 13. So here's a slide that I wanted to put in that talks about our security effectiveness that we see with the products that have the security content from the X-Force team. In 2009, with our network ICS products that we have in the ISS portfolio, we were able to keep our customers ahead of the threat 341 days. What that means is that we have protection capabilities embedded in our security products 341 days before an exploit was made available in the wild. So this is really significant information that we want to make sure that you are aware of when you're talking about this solution particularly, so that you have this information in your hand. On slide 14, this is the first half of 2010. So you can see we're still continuing to have this technology and this protection capabilities well ahead in most of these areas. So just wanted to make sure you guys had this information handy, and you'll hear us talk quite a bit about being ahead of the threat. And what we mean is for these vulnerabilities that we've seen, we've been able to have protection capabilities in the products before you saw attackers exploiting it. So moving on to slide 15, we're going to switch gears a bit and talk about web application vulnerabilities. So as I mentioned earlier, we had over 4,300 vulnerabilities that were disclosed in the first half of the year. And of that, 55% of all of those vulnerabilities affect web applications. So cross-site scripting and SQL injection vulnerabilities continue to dominate. But as you can see on this chart at the bottom, we continue to see this hockey stick effect of web application vulnerability disclosures during the first half of the year. And of the vulnerabilities, 88% actually affect the plugins and not the base platforms themselves. And this doesn't include custom web applications. These are those are some data that we can't track because they're custom. But of the web application vulnerabilities that we see, over half of them, 55% of all the vulnerabilities affect web apps. Moving on to slide 16. So to support that, we also have the OWASP top 10 threats that impact web applications. And so the interesting thing to note here is that half of the vulnerabilities highlighted here are related to user-induced exploits. So this point here is just to, you know, really look at and make sure that customers are understanding that some of the things like broken authentication and session management and how the session tokens and the compromising the passwords and keys, et cetera, these are all things that are designed to assume users' identities. So making sure that customers understand some of the top 10 threats that affect their web applications is important. So moving on to slide 17, these are some questions, again, that you can talk to your customers about and some of the offerings that we have to offset these questions. So, again, what's your vulnerability assessment process for web applications at this point? What about through the software development lifecycle? You know, are your web apps used to send or receive sensitive information? Is your organization subject to federal or state legislation around compliance? So on the right side, these are some of the key offerings that will help address some of these issues: identity and access management, our Rational App Scan product, as well as our web application security, and then, of course, our Secure Web Gateway service. Jamie, wanted to see if you had anything else to add here.
I don't really have much to add on this slide, except it does speak to, again, the security in depth. All of these products together help form that security in depth posture, where so it's not just one thing. Our Prevenia protocol analysis module is the engine for our IPS systems, and it works in tandem with other products like Rational App Scan, which can scan your source code and of your custom web application and feed the results of that into some of our products and help modify the policy to help protect your applications a little better. So basically the point is that, you know, one of these things alone is good to have, but it's better to, you know, target a whole suite of products in the security family.
Thanks, Jamie. Okay, so moving on to slide 18. This slide is talking to some of the client-side vulnerabilities that we see. So web browsers and document vulnerabilities continue to impact our end users. So this continues to be the highest category for client-side vulnerabilities, web browsers and their plugins. And in the first half of, the, of 2010, we see that document readers have almost surpassed the 2009 year-end totals. So, again, these continue to be a major issue with web browsers and document vulnerabilities that can impact your end user. So customers really need to understand that this continues to be a big problem for them. And if you go to slide 19, we take a deeper look into PDF vulnerabilities that we saw. So keep in mind, although this looks like it's downward sloping for the first half of the year, this is 6 months' worth of data. So already in the first half of 2010, we see that it's already almost surpassed our 2009 year-end total. So at the end of the year, you're going to definitely see, we think that you're definitely going to see this number to be at a higher number for us for 2010 than it was in 2009. So moving on to slide 20. So not only are we seeing PDF vulnerabilities, we're seeing a lot of PDF exploitation, which is seems to be a favorite among attackers to use PDF as a way to trick users in several different ways. So if you look at the chart on the right, we saw a significant jump in April, which we think was attributed to a large surge of malicious spam that was in circulation at that time. And then if you look at the bottom left chart, these are the top five most popular exploits that we saw in the first half of the year. And you can see of the five, three of them were directly related to PDF. So it's a big problem that we continue to see, and we want to make sure customers are aware that this is a major issue that we're seeing and we continue to see, unfortunately. Moving on to slide 21, this chart really is just it's sort of the same sort of news that we've been seeing over the past few years, that we continue to see bad web content continue to try to evade filters. So of the entire Internet, we still see about 7% of that contains unwanted materials and unwanted websites. And we see anonymous proxies, which attempt to hide the target URL from a web filter. That continues to increase. And we've seen it actually quadruple since 2007. So that continues to be a big issue that we see here. Moving on to slide 22, this slide really talks to some of the suspicious web pages that we see, and this is really directly related to obfuscation, or a way for attackers to hide or mask their malicious intent from traffic, in their traffic. So it's something that we continue to see, and it continues to be a big problem that we're seeing security professionals having to deal with. So, Jamie, I wanted to stop here and see if you had anything else to add here on JavaScript obfuscation and the type of damage that it's doing right now.
Okay, yeah. So obfuscation, as you can see by these charts, is continuing to increase. The attackers are continuing to mask their attack code to, the point is to evade detection by intrusion prevention systems and other security measures. Particularly or specifically, JavaScript obfuscation is on the rise, and that's because JavaScript allows you to obfuscate your code. It's intended to be used legitimately so that you can protect your intellectual property. So an example we like to use is Hulu.com, which allows you to play movies and TV shows, they obfuscate their code so that they can protect their intellectual property from other people vetting their videos and not giving them the credit or advertising money for that. The bad guys, however, are obfuscating their code again to evade filters. And this is one of the things X4 spends a lot of time on, and we spend a lot of research on, is we do a really good job at detecting obfuscation and discerning the difference between legitimate obfuscation and malicious obfuscation.
Yeah, so this is Tom Cross. I just want to interject that there's a reason that we wanted to focus on this subject in this trend report, and that is that we think this is an important competitive differentiator for the IPS systems that we're building. We do a good job detecting obfuscated attacks in the real world, and if you see attacks in the real world, chances are that they're going to be obfuscated. And so, there's a lot of people that put out signatures in their products to detect certain attacks, but those signatures are not effective, in a real-world scenario, and that's something that we think customers should be asking IPS vendors about.
Oh. Thanks, Tom and Jamie, for that. Let's move on to slide 23. And Tom and Jamie, actually, I want to see if you guys wouldn't mind taking the next three slides. It talks about the Zeus botnet, and we have some examples here that I think you guys should walk the team through.
Tom, do you want to take this one, or do you want me to?
I can't see the slides, so how about you go ahead and I'll interject if I've got something.
Well, let's see. I'm on the slide that says Zeus botnet activity increases. We've seen in this year, we've seen a new version of Zeus come out. It's dubbed Zeus 2.0, and it added quite a few features to Zeus, both to evade detection, as well as to add support for additional platforms such as Windows 7, including 64-bit operating systems. And we believe that with the new version of the Zeus botnet, it's attributed to the increase you can see on the graph on the right. In particular, we've seen a large spike in event activity in April. There are some myths that are explained here on this chart. Zeus is not a single botnet. Zeus is a botnet builder kit that the bad guys can buy, and they can use it to create their own custom pieces of malware, their own custom variants of Zeus. So there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of variants of Zeus out on the Internet, and they're all slightly different because the bad guys are able to pick and choose which features they want in Zeus. We go to the next slide. These are some screenshots from a crimeware service that tracks Zeus and shows infection rates and some log files and just analysis of Zeus and which operating systems and browsers it attacks.
I think the interesting point here, too, is the cost here is listed here. So, if you want to host normal Zeus clients for $10 a month. I mean, this is like a criminal enterprise around this. So,
that's right.
It's a very serious issue.
That's right, Wingo. The Zeus has actually somewhat created or spawned an underground economy, and there are people that build Zeus and sell Zeus, and then there are people that actually build plugins for Zeus to extend the feature set of Zeus, and they sell those as well, too. And as you can see in one of the screenshots here, as Wengui said, that you could actually pay for Zeus hosting. We go to the next slide. This one's particularly interesting. This is a screenshot of another malware creation kit called SpyEye. And SpyEye is much like Zeus. It allows you, if you're a bad guy, you're going to buy SpyEye, the builder, and it's going to allow you to pick and choose which features you want in your custom malware. And one of the interesting things that we're seeing with SpyEye is it includes a feature to actually kill Zeus or remove Zeus. So if you're able to infect a host, and that host is already infected with Zeus, SpyEye has the ability to actually remove Zeus. And this is this is somewhat like two mafias fighting a turf war. And this is something we believe we may see more of in the future as the bad guys are fighting over turf, and the turf is your hosts in your network.
Thanks, Jamie. So let's go to slide 26. This slide is from our content analysis team out in Kassel, Germany, and those guys do a really good job with the spam and phishing attacks that we see, and they provide all of the content for our churn report comes from that group. So this slide just talks to some of the bad websites that we see. So, you know, we see continue to see an increase in bad websites like pornography and gambling. And then also we see some increases in blogs and bulletin boards as also having malicious links on them. So the left side shows the top website categories that have at least one malicious link, and then the right side talks to those that have 10 or more malicious links. So moving on to slide 27, in the report we also talk about some techniques that our attackers are using that we continue to see during the first half of the year. They're using search engine optimization techniques to get their malicious website listed at the top of the search engine results. So think about every time you go to Google and you there's a big hurricane that's out in the Atlantic right now. If you go to do a search on that hurricane, you're probably going to see in the search results a malicious link. Attackers are looking at top trending topics that are going on, and they're using that to try to get their website listed in the top search engine results. So next time you go to Google, look at the URL you're clicking on, make sure that it's accurate. And also we see them continue to use rogue antivirus software as well to actually distribute their malicious content. So continue to see a big problem here, and this is something that's new that we've mentioned new in the return report this time to help educate end users about these type of issues. Moving on to slide 28, this one talks about the spam that we continue to see. We see spam continue to change to avoid detection. Over 90% of spam is URL spam. That's up again this year. We see spam domains actually moving away from China and going to Russia. And earlier this year, China changed its rules on how people have to register domains. They actually have to identify themselves or their businesses now in China. So we see spammers moving away from China and Russia. Interestingly enough, Russia also recently updated their rules and restrictions. So maybe when we get to the end of the year, we might not even see them on the list as well. So that's pretty interesting. And then we saw Brazil, the U.S., and India account for about one-fourth of worldwide spam during the first half of the year. The chart on the right top lists some of the popular domains that spammers are using to link their stuff to. And then the bottom is a chart that talks to the top 10 countries that are sending out spam. Moving on to slide 29, we saw spam volume actually reach an all-time high in June of 2010. That's the chart on the right-hand side. And we saw actually an increase in the average spam byte size. So that was interesting because it did not come with an increase in image-based spam, which is what we typically would have saw with that type of increase. So that was a bit of information that was new to us this first half of the year. So spam continues to be a big problem. Going on to slide 30, phishing attacks, we saw it during the second half of 2009, we saw a significant increase in phishing. And then during the first half, we saw that kind of come back down, go up a little bit, but then back down again. So Brazil remains the top sender in terms of phishing volume, and with India and South Korea following behind. Russia actually fell from rank 3 to rank 10 this year during the first half of the year. And then we saw Turkey disappear and Germany come into the top 10. The chart on the left bottom is all the top subject lines that we saw in phishing emails. And so this actually represented about 36% of all phishing emails we saw. Moving on to slide 31, this chart talks to some of the targets that we saw around phishing. So financial and credit card industries are targets that we saw, the top two targets we saw during the first half of the year. About 50% targeted financial industry in the first half, and then about two-thirds of the phishing targets in the first half were actually located here in, the, in North America, and with 32% in Europe. Slide 32, this is just a chart that kind of gives you an example of some of the commercial phishing kits that we see out there. And this stuff really makes it very easy for anybody to start a business here. So we just wanted to give you guys an idea of the type of things that are out there and that we're seeing, that how easy it is for a novice to pick this stuff up. Going on to slide 32, this year we included a section around virtualization security, which was new to the report this year and is something that we've gotten a lot of requests on in the past. So this is interesting because we saw 35% of server class vulnerabilities actually affect the hypervisor. So it really dispels the myth that there are no vulnerabilities that can impact the hypervisor. So this is some key statistics that we wanted to bring forward, as well as give you just some insight into the types of vulnerabilities that we see in this space. And so questions to ask your customers, you know, that are deploying virtual environments, you know, is that virtual environment secure? What do you do to help protect the hypervisor? And last quarter, Q4 2009, we introduced the IBM Security Virtual Server Protection for VMware, and this product is designed to protect the entire virtual infrastructure. So a really strong story to be able to go in and lead with this offering if you are dealing with customers that are virtualizing their data centers. Jamie, Tom, do you guys have anything else to add here?
Well, I think you've covered most of it, but it's definitely important just to point out again that when we pulled the data for the vulnerabilities relating to virtualization, 35% of those vulnerabilities are affecting the hypervisor. So it's important to ask customers, are they protecting that layer in the hypervisor, or are they just focusing on the guest operating systems themselves? And we have some anti-rootkit technology in our VSP offering that sits outside of the guest layer and is able to essentially protect the guests from getting infected by rootkits without the malware itself trying to remove the security software. So it's important to ask that difference. Are you protecting the hypervisor as well as your guest OS, or are you just focusing on the guest operating systems? And you can use this number of 35% of virtualization vulnerabilities affecting the hypervisor to your advantage in that conversation.
Thanks, Jamie. And then on slide 34, these are just some topics that we brought forward in the report this year. There's a feature trend section in the section one of the report that talks about IPv6 deployments and the fact that IPv4 addresses are running out, and what are some of the new things that are happening with IPv6. So just we brought that forward this year so that you can have that conversation with your customer that may be concerned about that issue. And then, of course, cloud computing. You know, that's a big topic of discussion, and we wanted to bring that forward this year in the report. We the data on it is a little light, so we're going to be working to try to have more rich data in the next coming trend reports. But we did want to address cloud computing, and we have that with an article in the trend report about this as well. And then on slide 35, this is just some of the solutions that we have inside the portfolio that help address the different areas of risk that we see. So I just wanted to have one slide here that kind of helps you think about some of the offerings that we have. And I'm sure I've probably missed a few here with the Big Fix acquisition that we just recently had that will probably definitely play into some of these areas. But wanted to just give you one place that you can go to that you can really look at to see what we have that maps back to some of these areas of risk that we talked about. And then slide 36 is just a slide that talks to some of the links that we have to get to the trend reports, the security alerts and advisories that we have inside of X-Force, and then also the blogs that we have. And then 37 is just additional information on how to find the sales kit that we have on X-Force. There's a sales kit on Software Sellers Workplace that has all of our presentations and data sheets, et cetera, that you have access to. And then also wanted to show you the list of contacts for everyone, the key contacts that we have inside of X-Force in case you have questions or need assistance. So with that, operator, I want to stop here and open it up for any questions that we may have.
Thank you. At this time, we are ready for the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. To withdraw your question, please press star 2. One moment. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. There are no questions.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for your time today. Again, if you think of any questions or have any things that may come up, please definitely reach out to us. We're here to help, and we look forward to hearing some of your feedback. Thank you.